It's Breakfast with Louie on Triple J.
Mark Watson, you are looking hot.
Thanks very much.
That's right. Now, you're in the country again to promote.
Sorry,
Hey, come on, man. Yeah, do you have an Australian passport yet?
No, although it would be handy because you do get grilled at customs. If I could just flash a proper passport, that would really help. I'm going to think, I'm not Australian, that's the only problem.
Yeah, you don't sound it either.
No, I know. But maybe just keep calling everyone mate until I get a passport.
Yeah, it'll eventually happen. Although I feel like Australians often say mate for people they don't like.
Yeah, it can be a bit of a passive-aggressive thing. Mate. Yeah. So maybe not, actually. Yeah. It's quite often not your actual mates, is it?
Yeah. Now, you've written a new book. You're in the country kind of promoting the thing. What's going on? It's called The Knot.
Yeah, that's right. I just sort of like patted it then, but of course this is the radio, so you can't see it. So there was no point in me doing that. But imagine I'm holding it up. Yeah, it's about a wedding photographer and his kind of ups and downs. The ups and downs of a wedding photographer with a dark secret. That's the idea of the novel.
Did you get a glance? Have you been to a lot of weddings? Is that how you came up with this?
I'm at the sort of age where quite a lot of my mates are getting married. But also, when I was a kid, I was in a church choir. So I went to a lot of complete strangers' weddings. Looking back, it's when I was like 9 or 10. It's weird to think about it now, but I saw a lot of people get married that were completely random strangers. So I had a kind of insight into that world from an early stage. Often quite bogan weddings, quite sort of grim situations, but they hired a choir to make it look a bit classier. So I saw some terrible stuff.
Oh, man, I think I've been to more strangers' weddings than people that I know. I think that's just the way weddings go.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? Because it's kind of, in a way, it's like the biggest day of your life or one of the biggest days of your life, and you've got all this emotion and all these loved ones. But yeah, there's always a handful of people that you've got no idea who they are as well. Even if I look back at our wedding photos, the old person, I think, who the hell was that? How'd they get in? Yeah, it's just one of those, it's one of those things. It's just a particular sort of snapshot of your life at that moment, and then as soon as the wedding's over, there's some people you will just sort of drift apart, and or as family members that you have to invite, but you didn't really want them to be there, and you couldn't remember who they were. It's a strange thing. It's a weird mixture of people at a wedding.
Yeah. Hey, so you're a really funny guy. You do some incredible stand up, but this book it seems a bit, you know, melancholic. Is it hard to get out of the comedy thing when you're writing a novel?
Well, yeah, I find it kind of it's nice for me to have the balance of both, because I sort of use the novels to write about stuff that I maybe wouldn't normally do on stage. If I went on stage and sort of talked about like the loneliness of life and dark secrets and people's desires, all that kind of stuff too much, I'd probably not have a great gig. So a novel is quite handy for that. I don't have to look people in the face. Hey. I mean, I do get sort of, when you're doing a lot of comedy and you're kind of cracking wise the whole time and taking the piss, then it's quite sort of relaxing to not have to do that, just to sit there and just write really gloomy stuff.
Wow, that's your downtime.
That's my downtime. I mean, it's not exactly gloomy, but it's, I should say I've got other interests as well. I go to the football. I'm a regular guy. I don't just spend all my downtime writing melancholy books.
All right, we're going to chuck on a song now. Hang around. When you're back, I want to chat a bit about some fun stuff that you've been doing at Edinburgh Fest.
Yeah, definitely. Just to reiterate, I am really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I believe you.
Loads of fun. We'll talk about it.
No, yeah, you're a fun bloke on Triple J.
Really, really fun.
Mark Watson here on Triple J. Fun guy. He's normally hanging out with Tom and Alex when he comes to the country, but they're on holidays, but he's here with me. This is all right?
It's absolutely fine, although I didn't know they were planning to be on holiday, so I obviously feel a bit hurt because I've come a long way just to find out that Ballard's gone the other way to Berlin.
No, I believe that you've come all the way to the country to hang out with him.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, he didn't really know, but this is the thing. I wish I'd planned it and let him know now rather than trying to surprise him, because it's a long way to come just to hear that he's gone the other way. I mean, and we could have met almost anywhere. If he was going to be in Germany and I'm coming here, we could have met in like Iran or something, whatever's halfway. It would have been perfect. But there you go.
Well, now that you're in the country and you can't hang out with Ballard, do you get a bit of downtime? Do you get to hang out anywhere cool or do fun things, or is it all business?
No, it's pretty empty without Ballard, but I'm still trying to make the most of it. I mean, I'm here doing writers' festivals and stuff, which anything that's a festival, there's a good chance of some drinking afterwards. So I'm I'm spending quite a lot of downtime just hanging out. I mean, it's quite easy, Melbourne and Sydney. Actually, Australia generally, I find it quite easy just to sort of just have a nice time.
Just sit
the
around.
The weather's nice. You can sit around. You can drink late. It's pretty relaxed. Yeah.
Hey, so you've been at the Edinburgh Fringe Fest and, you know, you did your show Edinburgh Olympics. Now, this is a pretty unusual event.
Yeah,
in,
it was...
In light of the recent London Olympics, I'm sure the Paralympics is still going, but...
Yeah.
What's this one?
Well, I just thought if everyone else was going to have an Olympics, I might as well do mine, because it's obviously very kind of profitable. I mean, the real Olympics was... everyone got obsessed with it, certainly in the UK. And so my idea was to do a kind of comedy Olympics where comedians would just do dumb stuff. Like the events were things like how many clothes can you get off audience members and put them on in 5 minutes, like piggyback races, throwing food around. Some of the stuff you don't see so much in the real Olympics.
Yeah, I haven't come across those. They sound, you know, quite ridiculous. Are you winning on any of them?
Well, I was sort of the host. So I would have three comics each night. We had some... Aussies, Adam Hills did one. We had several, actually. The Irish comics, I think, won overall.
So there's a medal tally?
We did keep a medal tally. I kept it, tried to keep it as official as possible, yeah, even though it was extremely stupid. The Irish did a lot better than they did in the real Olympics. That's the thing. They've got the hunger for it because they haven't had a lot of international sporting success. So give
them just take
a competition.
Anything.
Oh, yeah, you make them drink juice competitively, they'll go for it.
Oh, that's too good.
It was fun. Yeah, if you can, I mean, in Edinburgh festival or any comedy festival, there's a lot of work for comics, a lot of gigs, so if you give people the opportunity to do something truly stupid, they'll really go for it.
Oh yeah, filling up in juice is hard as well. I mean, you can.
It is. It's not as easy as it looks.
You try being on stage with a belly full of juice.
Yeah, that's right. So that was one event, and people, but they're kind of out of these cartons, so it all came down to who could squeeze the carton the hardest, basically. At that level of sport, you know how it is. Tiny things can make a big difference.
Yeah, it's all about getting an edge on your competition.
It really is, which, for example, stealing their carton for a few seconds, that kind of stuff.
Oh, wow, yeah. Yeah.
We all know it goes on. It goes on.
Getting the least pulpy juice.
Yeah, that's kind of that's a lottery. That's just the luck of the draw.
Are you a pulp juice man?
I am myself, but if I'm drinking competitively, I'm looking for the smoothest juice I can get, I reckon. Otherwise, it's just all over your teeth, isn't it?
Yeah, all right.
If I'm drinking in my leisure time, then I'll definitely just go pulp. I like quite a thick juice myself.
Yeah, you want a nice consistency. You want a pretty heavy.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, there are some people that they just won't have it. They won't have any bits of fruit in the juice, and they won't have any bits in the jam. You get some people that are very kind of very anal about it, but I think that's probably it points to some sort of psychological damage at some point in their life. I think.
Hey, you know what I noticed? I was just looking you up. I was looking at you on the internet. See, you got the Twitter verification tick of approval.
Yeah, bam.
How special is that?
I know. I didn't really ask. Well, I didn't ask for it. Just when I got to Australia, there was a direct message saying from Twitter itself, which you can imagine how, as a Twitter user.
Mr. Twitter.
For Mr. Twitter to get in touch was really something, yeah. Just saying, we'd like to verify you. I had to answer a couple of security questions, and suddenly it's a blue tick, yeah. I mean, it's just nice knowing that my tweets are actually officially from me, and it's not any kind of, I'm not impersonating myself, or this is the real deal now.
And you're on Triple J this morning, Louis McCurdy joining you, and with me is Mark Wadson. He's in the country. He's here for the Brisbane and Melbourne Writers Festivals. He's talking about his new book as well. It's called The Knot. And I hear there might be some more shows in the pipeline. Is that a thing?
Not on this trip, but I'll be back in Australia next year for Comedy Fest. Well, I don't know for sure, actually, but I imagine I'll be back at some point. I'm pretty much always here if I get the opportunity.
Actually, I suppose you can't do shows because I've heard that you're writing a graphic novel.
Yeah, I am doing that as well. Yeah, that's coming out next year. So I'm writing the story and another guy has to actually draw it. He's got the tough gig. For every page that you write of words, it takes him about 10 years to do all the illustrations.
Yeah, how many words to a graphic novel page?
Yeah, not that many. You know, it's like 8 or 9 panels with a bit of speech bubbles, a couple of little captions. But for him, it's like every single plot detail is an hour of his life. Being an illustrator is it's unbelievable, the amount of... Oh, it's just so fiddly. I could never do it. It's just all that kind of the sketch and then the colouring, and then you've got to change this bit, and then, oh, it makes me shiver just to think about how much work it is.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm like a slave driver to him.
What about the you know, you're a novelist. Is it hard to whittle down, you know, a page full of words to just a speech bubble full?
Yeah, it's been quite an interesting exercise. As a novelist, you just bang on, you just crap on, as the Australians say. So to try and, like, condense it as much as, you know, with a graphic novel, you can hardly say anything. You've just got to let the pictures do the work, which is quite weird, yeah.
Do you see the pictures first, or are you thinking about them, or what they're going to be like?
I've got the story, so I'm basically just mapping it out. A bit like making a plan, like a storyboard for a film or something. But whatever it is, it's just he smiles in this particular way, he's holding this. Anything I say is another problem for the illustrator, basically. Luckily, he's very good at drawing, but even so, there must be times when he thinks, ah, bloody hell. None of the characters are kind of like riding an elephant through a thunderstorm or anything like that yet, but maybe I'll start just messing with him to see if there's anything he can't draw.
Yeah, really test his mettle.
Yeah.
Hey, actually, you're out here promoting a book, but I know with comedians, they like to stand out the front of halls or theatres or whatever they're playing at and hand out flyers, you know, getting people's faces. Do you do that with books?
Yeah, well, a little bit. I mean, I was kind of hawking the book after my show in Edinburgh Festival, for example, and I've done that in Melbourne, in fact. Last time I had a book out, I was kind of selling copies outside my own show, which... It looks a bit kind of lo-fi, but if you're a comedian, I think it's okay, because no one thinks comedians are that sort of particularly well-rounded individuals anyway. The only thing is, you want the show to go well. If you have a bad show, then the audience is leaving disappointed, and then the first thing they see is you sitting there at a merch table. You do look a bit of a tool. You have to avoid their eyes as you go out. You know, that is one danger. With a gig, a music gig, you wouldn't normally get that, I don't think, but with comedy, it can go either way.
Yeah, did you see, I noticed when I was at Melbourne Comedy Fest earlier in this year, the headliners compared to the, you know, comedians just starting out, there is a big difference in quality of flyers. Did you, step up through the ranks? Did you start off on like tissue paper stuff and then get some real nice thick cardboard by the end?
Certainly in your early days, as you say, you're just taking what you can get, just basically black and white photocopies. You're going down to the copying shop yourself. You're cutting them up with scissors yourself. Whereas now, shiny is all hell, mate. But it takes time. You don't just get that. It's like the blue tick on Twitter. You've got to earn it. You've got to earn that paper.
Yeah.
Of course, the more expensive the paper and the more effort's gone into your marketing, the sadder it is when someone takes a flyer and then 10 paces on, they chuck it in the bin. But at least they're throwing away quality.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to be chucking out the good stuff.
Yeah, you want people to be treading on your face in perfectly clear definition.
Well, yeah, if you're throwing a weak pamphlet on the ground, it's just going to get crushed easily. The rain's going to ruin it. Oh, like with a good Mark Watson pamphlet, it'll be, you know, on the ground for a long, long time.
That's right. You can throw it away, but I'll still be there staring up, muddy footprints on my face. I'm not going anywhere. That's what it's all about. Basically, you know they're all going to be chucked away, so then it's about which ones survive even beyond the grave.
Hey, Mark, I got to let you go. Is that all right?
Yeah, of course it is.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in this morning. It was really nice having you. Have fun. I suppose you've already read it, so just having your own book, The Knot.
I have read it, yeah. I thought I'd see what happens in it, but yeah.
All right, Mark.
I'll enjoy having it on my shelves.
Mark Watson, comedian, novelist, graphic novel writer on Triple J. See you, mate.
Cheers, Louis.
Louis for breakfast. Delicious. Triple J.